Welcome back, everybody, and welcome. Happy Thursday afternoon. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Oh, our Brewers, poor Brewers, dropped one. 6-4 to the Diamondbacks this afternoon at AmFam Field. I think they just need a break. I don't know about you. We're going to continue, however, on this fine program to talk about the lies being peddled by Vice President J.D. Vance this afternoon in La Crosse about the big brutal bill and Donald Trump's attacks on workers, not just in federal government, but workers everywhere. And by workers, if you're listening to this program, I mean you. Even if you are a small business owner, I also mean you. Here to help us understand about all of this is Aurelia Glass, a policy analyst and with the American Worker Project, with the Center for American Progress Action Fund. It's a big mouthful trying to get out cleanly. She has formerly worked as a mechanical engineer and pursued a master's in international economics and finance from Johns Hopkins School for Advanced International Studies, one of the best in the country for policy analysis. Welcome to the program, Aurelia. Thanks so much for making time.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me on, Maggie. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. We've seen Donald Trump unilaterally strip collective bargaining rights from workers in the federal government, but it's much, much broader than his attacks on objective, independent civil servants and science. It gets into the private sector. And while it has been certainly a pillar of the Republican Party since Nixon's time to effectively attack both workers and organized labor, Donald Trump has really turned it up a few notches, I would say, including terminating folks off of the National Labor Relations Board and cutting the minimum wage for thousands of federal workers. What do these attacks mean in real terms for everyday Wisconsinites that get paychecks and have bosses?
Yeah, I mean, you have everything just right. Like, we need unions and we need basic labor protections. They're not just what brought you, you know, Labor Day cookouts on Labor Day weekend. They're what keep you from getting ripped off by your bosses at work. You know, imagine going to work one day and not knowing if you can take the vacation that you had planned, not knowing whether or not you'll get the overtime pay that you won as part of your contract. You know, those are the kind of questions that the federal workers, 1 million federal workers who lost their collective bargaining rights under the administration's actions, are having to ask themselves right now. And since the administration is trying to rip up union contracts, like as we speak, this is still ongoing. And the administration's attacks hurt the American public too, you know. The Veterans Administration earlier this month announced that it would end its collective bargaining agreements. And one of those contracts protects nurses who are whistleblowers, you know, who speak up about patient abuse at VA hospitals as something they've done in the past. And, you know, now are those workers going to have to ask themselves whether they feel comfortable being whistleblowers when they witness wrongdoing that hurts veterans when they no longer have those kinds of protections?
The whistleblower point, and worker protections, when workers speak out in employment circumstances, I don't think can really be overstated. And I want to be really clear about what this means, folks. Many of us, maybe even most of us talking today and listening and thinking about this, have likely worked in a non-unionized capacity. And we know that when you are not represented by a union, you will risk vacation time and maybe even your job or your salary level or possibly get demoted if you speak out in any way, shape, or form questioning your bosses or the company. I think a lot of workers actually live in some kind of fear. And certainly I understand that bosses want folks to be loyal. But when we talk about this in the particular context of government agencies and whistleblower protections, it is particularly pernicious. We want employees in government agencies to be able to speak out if they see things that are concerning to them. And it's why we used to have independent inspectors general and things along these lines, Aurelia. When that translates for the generalized attacks on workers, can you help just draw those connections a little bit for people? Like, why does it matter to someone who doesn't work in federal government or has never worked in government and may never work in government that Donald Trump has been so aggressively anti-worker in the federal government structure?
Well, one thing that's also key to understand is that this isn't just about federal workers. I mean, as you laid out, those attacks are bad enough on their own, but these attacks are coming from all over the administration, and they're affecting workers who aren't in unions and workers in the private sector too. You know, the Trump administration is even going after the minimum wage. This is the most basic labor protection that workers have in the U.S. The day after Labor Day, it's going to move forward in the next step in a process that'll end minimum wage and overtime protections for almost 4 million home care workers. You know, that's just one industry. It's difficult enough to find workers to provide home care for the elderly, you know, for the disabled in the home, but that's not going to get any easier once those workers don't have basic minimum wage protections.
And what is the, how are they making that work? What's the argument that they can strip minimum wage and overtime protections from home health care workers?
Well, it's important to understand a lot of these things, you know, they don't need to go through Congress necessarily to pass bills to make some of these things happen. You know, a lot of the authority for it is in the hands of the administration. And it's why it's important for workers to, you know, to be aware of this and to speak out against these attacks on, again, our most basic wage protections and against unions.
Folks, if you're just joining us again, we're joined by Aurelia Glass. She's with the Center for American Progress Action Fund. She works in their American Worker Project. Aurelia, as we work up to Labor Day, and you've recently written on this, and we look at the actions from Trump's first term to his second term, including these rules that will potentially allow employers to steal tips, the gaming of the tipping system, if you will. I'm going to call the gamesmanship that is potentially available when it comes to overtime, and how it'd be nice if your overtime maybe wasn't taxed, but that requires you to actually be entitled to overtime and your boss to pay it, your company to pay it. Tell us how this is different from Trump in his first administration. And can you share a little bit more how you are looking at or trying to judge objectively whether or not Donald Trump's policies are actually helping regular middle class and working families across the country?
I mean, it's a pretty stark difference. You know, in the first administration, we didn't have, you know, again, a million federal workers wondering if they're going to have organizing rights anymore. And as far as evaluating what the administration is actually doing, it would have been easier to say, you know, see whether or not wages for working class people are really going up or not. But, you know, after the firing of the Bureau of Labor Statistics commissioner, after the agency released, again, truthful job figures, that might not be as easy to evaluate. You know, we have to look at what the administration is actually doing. Is it strengthening basic labor protections like the minimum wage, or is it weakening those standards? Is it strengthening organizing rights, or is it attacking unions? And so far, the administration has clearly been on the offense against, again, these very basic organizing rights and basic labor protections in the U.S.
Aurelia, one of the things that I frequently remind listeners to the show about is what I call the most fundamental piece of, quote, the social contract. And in a capitalistic democracy, the social contract between employee and employer, or business owner and working folks that work in those businesses, is that if you work hard and as productivity increases, so will real wages. On a micro level, right, if somebody's willing to work 40 or 50 hours or 60 or whatever we say is a reasonable amount of good hard work in a week, they should be able to live with basic human dignity. Those are the pillars of the social contract. And the particular statistic that I frequently cite to folks is from 1973 to 2014, worker productivity in this country went up somewhere in the ballpark of 92%. And over that same time, we actually saw real wage growth. It was a little bit lower than that, but it was robust. It was somewhere in the high 80s, early 90s, 90%. That's what you expect. That's the social contract working. Now, we can talk about groups that were left behind, largely by virtue of very specific federal laws that exempted folks, and that was an abomination and remains so today. But just looking at that basic social contract, but when we move forward from 2014, excuse me, not 2014, into the 80s, but when we move forward, we look at that same productivity statistics. And again, worker productivity in the 90 plus ranges, and now real wage growth is de minimis. In other words, we continue to produce more for all of the business owners, but we're not seeing that return in real wage growth. To me, that is the promise that has been broken to American workers. And I have seen nothing from Donald Trump that's going to make that fundamental problem get any better. When we look at some of the factors that we can use to assess whether or not working people are getting better, in addition to real wage growth, what are some of the other facts that you have looked at in your study for the Center for American Progress Action Fund?
You know, there's a lot of other things, again, you consider. It's just this basic question of, is the administration doing the right thing in order to try to make it easier to unionize? Is it doing the right thing to try to strengthen and, you know, increase the number of people who are protected by our most basic labor laws? Or is it trying to take those away from people?
Yeah, and that, to me, if we lined up sort of a timeline of the laws that are designed to protect workers, and again, I always tell people, when you think about how you live your day-to-day life, the Monday through Friday work week, the 7 to 4, 8 to 5, or 9 to 6, all of these elements that are so much a part of many folks' workaday world, even if you're a second or third shift worker, those came about because of labor laws coming out of the Gilded Age and the Great Depression. It was through organized labor that the very fabric and contours of our modern work weeks were established. It's those things that Donald Trump and his MAGA colleagues are attacking now. What do we think our lives will look like if this pattern continues in another 20 years? Consider, for example, child labor. They want to get rid of child labor restrictions. I mean, oh my gosh, we're not talking about Sally or Johnny wanting to cut lawns for a little extra pocket money. We're talking about kids working full-time jobs and what that means when our minimum wage is only at 7 and a quarter. When we start turning to Wisconsin, Aurelia, what kind of economic reforms do you think leaders in states should be looking at in the face of these attacks by the Trump administration and MAGA leaders in Congress?
Yeah, it's a great question. This is a key moment for state leaders to really step up and take action, you know, that can increase wages and enhance the right and protect the right to organize for people. State laws really do make a big difference. When Wisconsin passed Act 10, which virtually eliminated collective bargaining rights for most public sector workers, you know, you saw the effects of that. The share of inexperienced teachers in schools went up. That's not the kind of thing that state lawmakers, you know, they shouldn't be trying to follow the example of what the administration is doing. Instead, they should be working to expand organizing rights and cement basic standards that make it easier for workers to be able to come together and negotiate. You know, that's what a lot of states are currently working on right now, a lot of really innovative models to expand bargaining rights to people who have really struggled with access to them. You know, the law is just stacked against, the deck is just stacked against them, like with fast food workers or with people like rideshare drivers.
Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk about the gig economy and some of these innovations to help make it easier for workers to organize with my special guest, Aurelia Glass from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back here on the Civic Media Radio Network.